Coming soon to own on video and DVD.
In a world where one man has seen every movie, there's one woman who's seen hardly any. Together, this unlikely duo must review all the best films she's never seen. Starring Jack Spade as the hero we didn't ask for.
Belt around the neck while he was trying to get his ham glazed.
And Leanne Foster as the damsel who doesn't know shit.
Thanksgiving is totally different for me now.
Huntsville Home Video, now playing.
The following movie is rated R.
Well, we're back. Talk about this movie that Leanne didn't give two fucks about.
Jack, stop!
Huntsville Home Video. It's your favorite podcast where I take movies that I love and I have quite an affinity for, and I show them to my unappreciative white. You white!
You white!
Yep. Back that up. I put too much emotion in that. My unappreciative white friend.
White bitch.
You're white. You're so white.
You're white.
You can't appreciate it because you're white.
Ain't got no melanin.
Ain't got no melanin.
Look at this shit. Ain't no melanin.
Pasty ass killbill hating bitch.
Oh my God.
Welcome to Huntsville Home Video on a Thursday. We are going to wrap up the Kill Bill series. Kill Bill Volume 2.
Dos.
Yes. God damn it. If you listened on Monday, well, you know what Leanne thought about Volume 1. I don't think Volume 2 is going to get any better for old Lily here. Very curious to see... Mm-hmm. What you think, mm-hmm. Leanne? So what did you think?
I feel about the same. Yeah? I feel about the same.
Did you like one better than the other?
I might have liked this one just a tad better than Volume 1.
Okay.
Maybe.
Is that because we get Michael Madsen in this one?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. I think more questions I get to see, Bill. More questions are answered. We finally get to the end.
All right. Fair enough.
But I kind of really, even though this was two separate technically movies and we're treating them like, you know, two separate episodes, I kind of judged it as a whole,
right.
I guess, and I feel pretty much the same about it because it was intended to be the one movie.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Long ass movie.
Now I will say that I prefer Volume 1 better than Volume 2.
Okay.
Over the years I've grown to appreciate Volume 2 more.
Did you like it or not like it the first time you saw Volume 2? Like, what were your initial thoughts when you first watched it?
The first time I, because the way that they released the movie was Volume 1 came out, and then I want to say it was almost a year.
It was a year, yeah.
Between, like, the second volume. Mm-hmm. So I left on the high of, you know, that showdown at the House of Blue Leaves, the mm-hmm. Your Daughter's Still Alive cliffhanger.
Right.
You know, all of that. And I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go. Let's fucking do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it felt... Like, after that year-long wait, this one was, it felt a lot more deliberately paced.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a lot slower. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the big action sequence like the House of Blue Leaves.
True.
So initially, I was just like, all right, I mean, yeah, it was good. And then I eventually had to, kind of like you said, you have to learn to appreciate it as one whole movie, like it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I grew to appreciate it better. I understood kind of some of the references that I had missed, some of the things that Quentin was going for, that he talked about in interviews after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. That makes more sense.
Okay.
And so, yeah, upon further reflection, I enjoy Volume 2 a lot more than I initially did.
Okay. Well, maybe I just need more reflection.
Reflect away.
Everybody needs time for reflection. They're always telling you reflect.
Yep.
Reflect.
Yeah.
Reflect.
Get to reflecting. Better reflect the shit out of this movie.
So yeah, Kill Bill Volume 2.
Kill Bill Volume 2.
Are we jumping into it, or is there anything, like, usually we take this time to chit chat around, but you don't look like you want to chit chat with me. Honestly, we haven't seen each other since we recorded the first one. I think that's been a deliberate plan of attack. And then now today, it doesn't look like you want to chit chat.
I mean, sometimes when the world hurts you, you fucking just roll it off your back. But when those you care about hurt you.
I know. Look, I've seen that look of repulsion. I know. You know what I'm talking about? Mitten? Michigan.
What the fuck?
What about Maine? Y'all know what I'm talking about in Maine?
Throwback to our Michigan listeners that started tuning in. I wonder if they've come back for Kill Bill Volume 2. They're like, no, that's enough of this.
This kinda, stupid bitch didn't like it.
Yeah. Kind of like Leanne with Kill Bill. She's like, ah, that's enough of this. Unsubscribe. Can I take back my 5-star review? No, fuck.
If you missed last week's episode and you dove into episode or to Kill Bill Volume 2 before you dove into Kill Bill Volume 1, I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I feel the same way about this one.
I mean, that's fair. You know, like you said, not everything is for everyone.
Yeah.
And you always cast your, oh, you're so fucking mad and angry and disappointed.
You're hurt.
But I mean, you're hurt. Part of the whole reason we started this podcast was just to show you movies that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't love one, I feel I have failed you because I didn't deliver on a movie that you loved.
Don't spin it that way.
No, that's what's happening. Happening right now, right here.
I'm beneath you right now.
I mean, right now.
Yeah. I don't mean to hurt your heart, but at least I'm being honest with you because I feel solid enough in our hell buddy friendship that we can have these moments.
I mean, and they should be there. They should, we should absolutely have these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
We are
two different people.
Have the tough talks.
Right. That's a good friendship.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at. And we'll work through this.
I agree.
We'll rise above it.
We will.
Just pick a better one next week.
I have one in mind. And it's going to be a very special episode next week, too.
It is.
Yeah.
Because it'll be our 1 year.
It will be 1 year of Huntsville Home Video next week. Holy shit.
Uno año, baby.
Best thing to come out of this pandemic, Huntsville Home Video. Goddamn right.
Uno. That's a throwback. I'm just trying to get you to like me again.
I mean, I don't dislike you.
But I don't love you. I get it. How I feel towards the movie is how you feel towards me. They correlate with one another. I see now. I get it completely. All right.
But you know what, though? Like, after we record this podcast and I leave here and I'm just like, man, you know, fucking Lily wasn't happy with the movie. I mean, she fucking just didn't get it, fucking whatever. But then, like, later today, you're going to send me a text. You're going to shoot me a meme. We're going to crack fun of some fucking mutual putts that we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to be like, I can't fucking stay mad at you.
We'll come back together.
Yeah.
We'll bond again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It happens. It's all good.
Kill Bill. So we just jumping into it? What do we want to do?
Kill Bill Volume 2. Let's wrap this fucker up.
Let's do so. It starts with the same scene as the first movie, which is a great fucking scene where the bride, it's black and white, and she is, she's saying it's going to be your baby, blah, 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 gets shot. Now it's black and white once again, and she's on her way to the last one on her list, which is Bill. She's going to kill Bill. Hence the name of the movies, Kill Bill.
She went on what the movie advertisements call a rip-roaring revenge rampage.
Ooh, it's all R's.
It's alliteration.
I need another R. So she is going to kill Bill, who is number 5 on her list. And then we begin chapter 6, which is Massacre at the Two Pines. We finally get to the chapel and what happened at the chapel, which actually wasn't a wedding. It was a wedding rehearsal. And that Samuel L. Jackson is Rufus, is it not?
It sure is.
Yes. That made me happy. and this is the most awful thing in the whole dos movies where they're trying to plan the wedding and we're figuring out where everybody's going to sit. That is the ultimate nightmare for me. That's the most brutal thing in this movie.
I mean, that's fair.
Can you, I mean, you've married, you uh-huh. have that, I can't imagine planning a wedding like that.
Here's how awesome our wedding was. Hey, we're going to go to the Graceland Wedding Chapel. in Las Vegas and we're going to get married. They can house 30 people in this chapel.
That's it.
Like, who do we invite? Like, here's my list. Here's Rachel's list. I'm like, all right, I don't like these people. You don't like these people. We'll cut them off the list. They can come to the reception in April. Boom. Wedding part one planned.
Before I ever met you, I said, if I ever have a wedding, like a wedding that's not just like either, you know, a courthouse thing or whatever, I'm going to Vegas and getting married by Elvis.
That's what's
that
up.
Was before I knew you. And then you just solidified that that is going to be what I do if I ever get married.
It was fucking money.
Because I can't imagine sitting and planning a wedding and talking with a priest or a minister and going, who sits where? Nightmare.
No, it was horrible. In fact, the only planning that went in was the day of the wedding, the Elvis impersonator came out, who was top notch. Like,
I would expect him to be.
Like a phenomenal Elvis impersonator. Mm-hmm. He comes out and instead of like corsages or whatever, they had these awesome Graceland Wedding Chapel scarves. And I'm like, oh shit, I want this color. My best man gets that color. And then everyone else gets this color. And Elvis just goes, all right, man, now let me ask you this question here, which who's going to get what color? And I'm just like, all right, well, here's the colors. He's like, all right, man, I'm going to hand these out to everyone, man. I'm going to get the scars from the Kang.
Was he still?
Little wink and a finger gun. And I'm like, dude, yep.
He was Elvis the whole time?
He was Elvis the whole fucking time.
Oh, my God.
In fact, when the wedding part, like everyone was coming in, Elvis was up on the stage just strumming an acoustic guitar.
Oh my God.
I didn't tell him to do this. I didn't plan this. I think he just looked at the name of the couple getting married, saw the last name, and did an acoustic Elvis influenced version of Ace of Spades.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yup.
That's the coolest fucking thing I've ever heard.
It took me a second because I didn't immediately pick up because it wasn't
that's so foreign.
It wasn't fast. Mm-hmm. It was like slow and acoustic. Like you would hear as wedding attendants are coming into the chapel. I hear, well, if you like to gamble, tell you I'm your man. I'm like,
what? Shit.
I turned around and my jaw just dropped and I'm like, oh fuck, this is happening. And like Rachel hadn't even walked down the aisle yet. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, he gets like, Ace of Spades. And I was just like, can we just acknowledge that Elvis opened up my fucking wedding with Ace of Spades and all 30 people are just like applauding. And I turned around and I'm like, dude, thank you. Like have the arms. I'm like, dude, you're the man. Again, wink, finger guns. And I'm like, you really are Elvis.
Is amazing.
Yeah. It was fucking number one.
That is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Oh, I want that in my life.
It was great. It was so good.
Mm. Which Elvis was he? Was he young Elvis? Was he jumpsuit Elvis?
Golemay suit Elvis.
Oh, my God.
Had the aviators on.
Oh, this is such a good Elvis.
Mm-hmm. Was macking on some of the bridesmaids. Like, just fucking great.
Oh, man.
We would, like, there was a minister that got up and, you know, he said some words. And he's like, Elvis, would you like he was Cajun? Like he sounded like he was from like that Cajun area of New Orleans.
It just keeps getting better.
And he was like, we have it on DVD. I'll show you sometime.
Oh, I want to see it.
The minister was like, you know, he gets up and he says some, you know, things about love or whatever. And he's like, Elvis, would you like to take over? And then
that's not Cajun.
I know. It's yeah, whatever. Whatever. French, Cajun.
It's kind of the same thing. It's a watered down French.
Yeah.
It's a muddied French is what it is.
You don't like me for my impersonations. You like me for my movies.
That's true. Yeah. Well, this week.
Just not today. But yeah, then Elvis takes over and he just like plays a song and just fucking killed it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great. But that was all
the planning. Elvis does the ceremony, not the minister.
You can go either way with it.
Okay.
Like Elvis is a big part of the ceremony. Okay. Yeah. Like he's there the whole time. He's interacting. Uh-huh. He's like, you know, cutting up. It's yeah. The whole thing is great.
Oh my God. If you renew your vows, I got to go.
All right. We plan on it.
I got to go.
We plan on it.
I got to go. Elvis can mack on me any day.
Save it for the promo.
Maybe I'll win him over with my charming personality.
Right. gotta wonder how many bridesmaids have won over Elvis with their charming personality. Like that, I mean, that's a dude that loves his life. Yeah.
Damn.
Oh,
I got to be a part of this.
And then we did a wedding reception a couple months later back in our hometown where all our friends could come to.
Smart. That's how to do it.
Yeah. And yeah. All the planning that went into that was, hey, Rachel, do what you want to do. And we had friends that own he was like a part owner of an immaculate wedding venue that would have cost us way too much fucking money. But like, we know people who know people.
Right.
So we got it for like, hey, do you think if we required that your friends drank like $3,000 worth of booze, they could do that? I'm like, in an hour. And it took them like 45 minutes.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Everybody did their part.
Yeah. So we had an amazing wedding. I put a playlist together. We didn't hire a DJ because fucking wedding DJs are gross.
Right.
And we say that as radio people. Uh-huh. Wedding DJs are way below us.
The worst of the worst.
How many, have you ever been asked to MC someone's wedding?
No, thank God.
God, I get it.
I don't want
so
to.
Many times. Not so much anymore.
Oh no, I did get asked once by a former employee who used to work here.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, never done it before. I'm busy. God. Sleeping on my couch.
Yep. You made the right call, my friend.
Yeah, I don't want to do it.
Right call. No, we just like hooked up an iPad, hit shuffle.
Yeah, why do you need anything else?
And it was great.
No. I don't need somebody talking over a mic.
Here's how much I just despise fucking wedding DJs, right? Like the venue that we were at, it was a 100-year-old church.
Ooh.
and it was remodeled, reconditioned, everything was, you know, like updated, and the place looked immaculate, right? So at the front of the event center was a stage, like a raised stage that had concerts and stuff there, and they asked us how we wanted to set stuff up, and we're like, oh, we'll have tables and stuff over here. We'll probably have, the DJ just set up back there. We'll probably have a couple tables set up on the stage here for like the wedding party and stuff like that. We'll do the first dance up there.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that kind of oversees all of these weddings that come into this venue, they're like, oh, that's a really good idea. And I was like, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, having the first dance on the stage. And I'm like, why wouldn't you?
Right.
Well, the DJ usually sets up there.
Ah.
Why?
Dickholes.
Oh, you know, so that they can, you know, be seen and be part of the thing. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, why? It's not the DJ's fucking wedding.
Right. Right.
Like, fuck you if you're a wedding DJ and you want to go be the star of someone else's wedding, which I feel a lot of wedding DJs do.
Yeah.
Like, you can be entertaining and hype the crowd up and keep them lively, but don't try to upstage anything. Like,
no,
fuck you.
Mm-mm.
Fuck you.
I wouldn't want my dance on a stage, though. I don't want people looking at me while I have bad rhythm.
Well,
I ain't got no rhythm in these bones. Just be stiff ass me going. Rah, rah.
Have you met my uncoordinated wife?
Oh, not have a dancer.
No. Have you met me?
Not a dancer.
Have you seen our height disparity?
Yes. That would pose a problem.
I mean,
because she's teeny tiny and you tall.
Yeah, I mean, but it had, you know, we made it work.
Uh-huh. She just rest your arms on her head?
Pretty much, yeah. had my forearms on top of her noggin, just like dancing
guiding
away.
Guiding her where to go?
Yeah, dancing around to You're So Cool. I'm from the True Romance soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Literally all the planning that went into our wedding. None of that, like, you sit here, you do this. Like,
you got the important stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had friends that have lost their fucking minds trying to plan that shit. And then they get divorced anyway, so what's the fucking
exactly.
point?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You spend all that money and shit to just, yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
And even if Rachel and I, God forbid, do one day get divorced, it's not like we're out thousands and thousands of dollars. We went into zero debt planning our wedding and paying for our wedding.
People spend so much for a day where you spend all this money for a afternoon where you make other people dress up to come there and watch you make out in front of a holy man. What happens.
And that shit is a racket.
Yeah.
Like, my God. Like,
yeah.
If
you could have bought a house.
You could have
put a down payment on a house or an automobile.
Straight up. And not only that, but it's like if you were to rent that venue any other day for any other thing than a wedding, it's like half the price.
Yeah.
It's for a wedding. We're going to add an extra $5,000 onto this.
Yeah.
You know, you can rent a karaoke DJ for like, what, $100 for the night?
Sure.
Or you're going to pay $5,000 for a wedding DJ for the evening?
Redonkulous.
Fuck out of here.
Absolutely redonkulous.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. What a racket. What a racket.
Complete.
And this whole thing about the rings and the price it has to be and all this bullshit.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yes.
Can you imagine me picking out species of flowers? I don't even know if they're called species, but can you imagine me trying to pick out a chrysanthemum from a lily? Chrysanthemum?
Remember how we said on Monday we're both just different levels of stupid?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to call back to that.
Fuck you. If I say chrysanthemum correctly, what do you picture in your brain? Do you know what a chrysanthemum looks like?
Like a yellow flower with black
rings. Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!
You just threw a pen
I did.
At my head.
I did. And I missed.
Oh, fuck.
I needed that pen. Thank God there's a second.
So what we've learned is that I will just plan your wedding.
Yes. Please help me. Chrysanthemum, my ass, a yellow flower. Fuck you. How do you spell chrysanthemum?
I'll Google that shit.
Oh, God.
Oh, fuck. That was funny.
So weddings.
So, yeah, Kill Bill Volume 2.
We needed that tangent. We needed a good tangent.
Thank
God. We're back on track to who we need to be. We're ourselves. Okay. So it wasn't a wedding. It was a wedding rehearsal. And they're setting up where everyone is going to sit. A nightmare. So the bride goes to get some air where she sees Bill. He's found her because he's the man. And he's going to do his. He's playing his flute. He's been playing his flute, and we finally get to see what Bill looks like. We finally get to see.
I mean, that's how I like to make introductions. Just, you know.
Playing a flute.
Sitting outside.
Blowing on a pipe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've made a few introductions like that.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, you're yes, we finally get that's to so meet funny. David Carradine. Bill. You know how David Carradine shuffled off his.
I do remember how he did, and that's the only way I they see. It's like that's the thing I think of when I see David Carradine. I'm like, you jerked it and died.
Kind of has to be like you know? You
it's like seeing Kevin Spacey. I'm like, you're a pedophile.
Yeah.
See him, and I'm like, you. Was it a belt? He hanged himself
belt around
with?
The neck while he was trying to get his ham glazed.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. I never heard that before. Thanksgiving is totally different for me now.
Oh, shit.
When my father says to me, let's glaze this ham, I'm going to fucking die. I can't.
Or just out of knee-jerk reaction, hand him a belt. Wow.
I'll just be like, you got a belt. Have at it.
Okay. All right. Not how you do things in this house, all right?
Different kind of glaze. Stands for something else.
Let me tell you the story of David Carradine.
Get his hand glazed. Jesus Christ. So anyway.
at what point in one's life do you have to put a belt around your neck to try to get off?
Why do you have to do that?
Yeah.
Why do you have to go to such great lengths?
I'm
to
not
glaze
saying.
One's ham.
Glad that one hit home for you.
It's changed my whole world. It's changed everything.
You're right, though. You are 100% right. That is how you see David Carradine.
If you have to go through that much effort,
yeah,
why even do it? You know?
Yeah.
It's not.
Poor son of a bitch. Michael Hutchence in excess, same thing.
Yeah.
Every single one of us, the devil inside and a belt around your neck. Bum, 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 bum. It just doesn't flow as well. It's still true, though.
Ooh, God damn it. Yeah, no, that's exactly what I think of when I hear his name or if I see him, which is very unfortunate. I hate that, but yes. Oh, but we meet. Okay. All right.
You back on track?
Glazed ham.
You with
Jesus
me?
Jesus Christ. Okay. All right. So we find him on the porch of this wedding chapel where he's been playing his flute. And he's going to do his best to be sweet at this wedding. And she's the only, we find out she's the only one who's ever seen his sweet side. So we know that they have a more than professional past. And he asks about the groom, wants to know what old Tommy does. And he owns a record store, a used record store, and she works in his record store. That's her life now. And it's apparently better than killing people for lots of money.
I would beg to differ.
I would beg to differ too.
I think I would have more fun killing people. You can still hit up record shops all around the world
mm-hmm. while you're killing people for
while
large sums of
people.
Money. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I like this exchange between the two of them and how they filmed it with their steps getting closer to one another. And just their whole dialogue was great. And so Bill seems very nice and he can't wait to meet Tommy and sit on the bride's side. Because while they're discussing who sits where, the bride doesn't have any family. So nobody's going to be sitting on her side specifically.
Right.
But now Bill's going to be able to do that. So the bride tells Bill to say that her name is Arlene. So we're already starting off the marriage on a lie, which I'm sure is going to be great. And she says that Bill is her dad, which I can assume really pissed Bill off. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
This is my dad while you're carrying his baby.
Yes. Not cool.
Not cool, bro. Not cool.
I'm going to use this belt on your neck.
And Tommy seems like a sweet dope. He's well-intentioned, but he's a dope.
Yeah, yeah.
So they begin to rehearse the wedding. Bill sits on the bride's side, and you think he's going to let her get married since this is what she wants. But then as the camera backs away from the chapel, we see the Deadly Viper gang come in, and machine gun fires as the camera pulls away. Pretty cool shot. I didn't need to see it. You know what I mean? Like, it was great. It was like, I know what's happening in there. I almost didn't need to see it. You know,
right.
It was cool the way it was shot. So, and this was all done in black and white, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think. So the next scene, we are back in color. And Bill is telling Bud, Michael Madsen, what the bride has been up to. Because now we're up to her working on her list,
yep.
out of a
yep,
coma
yep.
on her list. And at that point, she has killed Oren. We learn that Bud has not kept up his sword play. In fact, he hawked his Hanzo sword.
You sold a Hattori Hanzo sword?
For $250.
Yeah, Bud is not doing as well as the other Vipers, you know? Like, Oren's, like, pretty much the leader of the crime world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got Vernita in the burbs
right.
with her kid and whatever. She seems to be doing all right.
Elle's rocking her eye patch.
Rocking it well. She's got multiple eye patches to coordinate with every outfit.
Uh-huh.
Man, you got to be on your eye patch game if you have to wear an eye patch.
For real. I would have multiples.
Yeah.
For sure.
Would you do a glass eye or would you do the eye patch?
It would be cool to kind of pop it out, you know, like at a bar or something. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would be my life. If I lost an eye, I would get a glass eye and then I would just do bar tricks for the rest of my life.
Yep.
I feel like that's the life I'd want to live, you know?
I feel if something ever happened to us where we separated mm-hmm. in our lives, you know, like if you moved away or something mm-hmm. or whatever, if I would find you years later, it would be in a bar doing weird eye tricks with your glass eye. That's the story that I've written for you in my head.
It's somehow endearing, also depressing, but that's...
Well,
there's something about it that's oddly true.
Well, after we stopped doing the podcast, I fell on hard times and I got diabetes in my eye.
Lost a toe and an eye.
Lost a toe and an eye. And then I just decided, fuck it. Might as well ride this train out drunk. Just pop my eye out for free whiskey shots. Hey, over there, twizzle dick.
Hey, twizzle dick and fuck.
Come over here. Give me a shot of fireball. Take my eye out for you.
Oh, God. That would be me. Give me a shot of fireball and take my eye out for you. God damn it. That's some fucked up shit. Oh, man.
It's true, though.
I feel its potential. I feel like I have that potential.
Like on an alternate timeline, that's the Lily without this podcast.
If the podcast hadn't have intercepted my life, I'd be at a bar popping my eye out for Fireball.
It was about this time last year where you're just like, fuck, I'm either going to start this podcast with this fucking idiot coworker of mine, or, man, my eye is fucking bothering me this week. I should get it looked at.
You notice this twitch?
Fuck, yeah, fine, Jack, whatever. Let's start the podcast.
That first week, that twitch went away.
Mm-hmm.
And all was saved.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. Buy me some Fireball. I'll pop my eyeball out. God damn it.
Fucking poet. What can I say?
So he sold it for $250 and now he's the bouncer at a titty bar who wears a cowboy hat. A lot going on with Michael Madsen. A lot going on with Bud.
Michael Madsen just showed up to set with that hat.
Oh, fantastic.
Like that wasn't wardrobe. That wasn't Tarantino's choice. He's just like, I got this hat.
And, well, he's living in a trailer in the desert.
Right.
So it works.
Well, Tarantino hated that hat. And he's like, hey, man, let's lose the hat. No, man, I think I'm gonna wear this hat. I think Bud would wear this hat. And he's like, okay, fine. So Tarantino wrote into the script that the manager hates that fucking hat.
Perfect. Okay, that makes me love that even more.
Yeah.
That's perfect. I will say it was so weird to see Michael Madsen as Bud and not as Mr. Blonde.
Vic Vega.
Vic Vega. I thought he was, I just felt like he would be Vic Vega-esque in anything else. And so it was weird to see him not that in this movie.
Well, and even when you just see the little glimpses of him in the first one.
He had on the suit, Mr. Blonde. Yeah,
yeah. You know, and you've seen the other members of the squad and they're, you know, they're very, you know, on a different level.
Right.
And then you see just like his current condition and that broke down and you're like, oh shit.
You know, he's
not, you know, clearly he's not out, you know, doing the assassin life anymore.
No.
He's just kind of a broke down, like you said, a strip club. DJ. Did you catch who the bartender was in that strip club?
Yes, I did. I have it in my notes. Sid Haig.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love him.
Old Captain Spaulding.
I just smile every time I see him in anything.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, I adore you.
Tootie fucking fruity.
Fuck your grandma. Fuck your mama.
Man, Sid Haig was good.
Most of all, fuck you. God damn. So sad he's gone.
Yeah.
So good. But he just, that's one he command, to me, he just command, when he's on screen, he commands it.
Yeah.
It's just perfect.
And one of the things I love about Tarantino is he has seen so many of those actors like that in so many movies that, you know, he brings them into movies to be like, hey, like this dude is fucking amazing. Remember, like, I mean, he's the guy that basically gave John Travolta another career.
Yeah, which I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because back in the like early days, like John Travolta was like pretty baller, you know, and then he kind of hit some bad luck and some shitty movies and some poor decisions. Tarantino's like, nah, he used to be awesome. Here, put him in this fucking movie.
See, I never knew that until recently. I read that somewhere, or maybe you're the one who told me. Maybe we discussed it here. I don't remember, but to me, John Travolta's always been famous. He's always been number one guy.
Really?
And because I just didn't know any better. I didn't know his history. I just thought, you know, he was big back in the day. I didn't know he had a lull. And then I just thought he was always famous to Pulp Fiction. And then he was famous after that. Had no idea there was a lull in his career.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that was news to me.
Even if you go back and watch Jackie Brown, that was the movie he did. I want to say it was right after Pulp Fiction. You know, he brought in like so many great character actors that were big in kind of those exploitation movies in the 70s and 80s and stuff, you know, and not in like big career changing roles or whatever. But it's just like, oh, that dude's fucking awesome. And that dude's fucking awesome. Holy shit, that dude's fucking awesome.
Right.
You know, brought Pam Grier back in Jackie Brown. Like she was huge in the exploitation, the blaxploitation flicks back in the day, like Coffee, stuff like that. And, you know, put her in Jackie Brown. She was awesome in that. Michael Keaton was in that before he was like Michael Keaton again. He was kind of off of that post Batman high, just kind of like riding out the, you know, the bottom of the barrel type roles and stuff. Tarantino put him in a movie. I'm like, fuck yeah.
Had no idea.
Tarantino has a great eye for, like, whether you like the movie or not, he'll put, you know, some of those older actors in from the past. He'll take some newer actors, like some more indie actors, and put them in roles. You're like, oh, that dude's going to be fucking cool. You know, like in Inglourious Basterds, Michael Fassbender's in there for a scene. And like, that dude's pretty awesome. So
was he big when that movie came out, or was that kind of
the, he was on his way to being big. And then he kind of like went away again. Like he, like Michael Fassbender's an actor that's very inconsistent with his roles.
He's handsome.
I mean, he's a good looking dude. Makes a good Magneto.
Yeah.
He's like, every time I watch that, watch him in those younger Magneto's movie, I'm like, man, you're going to grow up to look like old ass Ian McKellen. And I don't see it. But all right, let's go. Let's fucking party. Let's boogie.
Well, Ian McKellen was young at one time.
I mean, yeah.
It's hard to believe.
I like him too. He's cool. He needs to be in more shit.
Yes.
Because we're not going to have him around for much longer, I hate to say.
I love him and Patrick Stewart. Their little bromance with each other is everything to me.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
That's that. Yeah. They're BFFs and it's totes adorbs.
Totes adorbs.
They're like the old man version of us.
Yes. Who gets to wear a scarf?
You can rock scarves.
Okay.
If you want to.
You know, I've never worn a scarf.
No.
And I'm a lady. Well,
I'm a proper Southern gal.
I'm a proper lady. And I never wear a scarf.
Let's get you in a scarf.
I don't know why. I feel like it would cover up some chins. I feel like either we cover it up or it would accentuate them. That's why I can't do turtlenecks.
If I couldn't grow a beard, I'd probably be a scarf wearer.
No beard and a scarf?
Oh, God. Can you imagine that look on me?
What was that phrase? Little gay, my dude.
Little gay, my dude. But here's my level of style. So like currently I have like just a plain generic fucking t-shirt, black cargo shorts, my fucking sliders, and I'd wear a scarf.
You're wearing sliders a lot now, and you haven't been.
No,
it's been this has been a recent thing.
Like,
do we need to acknowledge it?
It's just coming with age.
Okay.
Like I think I'm just old and I don't care anymore.
All right. Okay, that's fine.
I had a pair of like nice sandals. I've never been a sandal guy. Like fucking hated sandals.
Do you mean flip flops?
No, I mean like
sandals.
Like Air Jesus's, like the kind of sandals Jesus would wear if they had like proper cushioning. Yeah, I liked them. They were comfortable, and I didn't want to slip on shoes every time I had to like let the dog out at night.
Right.
So I'm like, fuck
no, I get it.
Fuck it, I'm old and I want comfort. And then the dog ate those sandals.
Oh,
so I bought like this $10 pair of fucking Walmart little fucking slide-ons, but they're comfortable.
I don't have a problem with it. I just, it's a new thing and I've noticed it multiple times now and I just didn't know how to address it.
This is part of the aging process.
That's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
I will probably start wearing scarves and smoking.
And a cardigan?
And smoking a pipe. Yep. There'll be a cardigan. There'll be pipe smoking.
Yeah.
There'll be.
Did it.
Yeah.
Did it.
Yeah.
I love a cardigan.
Like whatever is like, I don't get like, I've never given a shit about style or what I look like.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, but now it's just peak comfort.
Right.
And if peak comfort is like basketball shorts and some sliders to go out and get groceries.
Do it.
There it is.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Don't give a fuck.
Mm-mm. I applaud you.
Thank you.
We just needed to acknowledge it because
okay.
I just noticed it.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. What are we doing? We're with Bud
at the strip club.
Bud at the strip club. Well, first he's talking with Bill at his trailer, and Bud thinks that the bride actually deserves her revenge and that they deserve to die. Like it's only fair.
Very existential.
Very, yeah, absolutely. Then we go to chapter 7, which is the lonely grave of Paula Schultz. Ooh, sounds ominous. Bud arrives at his place of work and yeah, I put Sid, he's the bartender. I have questions because in the back room, the boss and a chick, I guess a stripper, is in the back, doing coke in the office, in the back office. Is that a normal thing at a strip club?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Figured so. There's just cash laying out everywhere and then they're doing coke at the desk.
Now, the last club that I worked at, the office setting was a little more quote unquote professional.
Okay.
Or at least they tried to make it look, you know, but yeah, I mean, I've seen.
There's got to be a lot of coke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some girls come out about to go on stage and I'm like, hey, wipe your nose before you
dust
go,
off.
Yeah. a little dusty.
Looking for fingerprints.
We had years and years ago, a bunch of wrestlers came to town.
Mm-hmm.
They had a house show in Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And I met some of the wrestlers and I was like, hey guys, get through the radio station. We did like interviews or whatever. And I was like, hey guys, if you want to, after the show, I'm also the DJ at the strip club here in town. If you guys want to come out for a night, we'll set aside a spot for you. You won't be bothered. Here's a bunch of passes. Come out, hang out at the strip club.
Nice.
Like, oh shit. Thanks a lot. And like, as soon as that house show ended, within like an hour, like wrestler after wrestler after wrestler just started showing up at the club. And I'm just like, oh, this is going to be fucking cool.
Okay.
And so I'm introducing myself to all the wrestlers. And I go, I go up to one who at the time, I'm not going to name names here, but at the time was the champion for WWE. And I said, hey man, what's up? I'm Jack. I'm the DJ here at the club. What can I get for you? I'm like, let me know if there's anything I can help you find, get you taken care of.
Okay.
And he, while he's still holding my hand,
oh,
he pulls me in close and he's like what?
Oh.
I'm like, ooh. And I'm trying to be like, you know, Johnny Cool Guy. I'm trying to be like, right. I got you, fam, whatever you need. I was like, what do you need, man? Just let me know. And he's like, could you give me a little nose?
And nose?
And I stopped for a second. I was like, do you mean Coke? And he's like, yeah. I'm like,
what are we, elementary?
I'm like, who the fuck calls it nose? I mean, yeah, I can get it for you, but fuck.
We're gonna act like adults and we're gonna call it what it is, which is Coke.
Yeah. Little yayo.
Get your that yayo.
Get you a little snortsky. It's better than nose.
Booger sugar.
Also, keep in mind, like, I was such a huge wrestling fan, and I still to a certain extent am.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of where Jack found out that Santa Claus doesn't exist. Cause I just had the WWE champion ask me to buy him Coke.
I don't know who the fuck this is.
In a strip club. I'll tell you off air.
Okay. I made a note for you to tell me. Like, which wrestler is on this thing.
Well, what's funny too is a lot of my friends who listen to this podcast know, they've heard this story. They know exactly
who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
So I kind of, you know, I leave the little area we set up for him, and I was like, man, the WWE champion just asked me for Coke. And I went like, I knew exactly the stripper that I was going to ask. And I was just like, hey, old boy up there needs some cocaine. And she's just like, oh, yeah, I gotcha. And then just like went back to the dressing room, came back with some Coke.
So did you have a problem that he wanted Coke or that he called it nose?
A little bit of both.
Both? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I think I always, because you always heard stories about the
dudes. Well, they're your heroes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you also heard the stories about like back in the day and like the 80s, all those wrestlers were on like Coke and Speed and fucking uppers and downers, you know, mm-hmm. just like trying to keep themselves going or whatever. But to physically be there to see it. You know,
right.
To have been asked,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, hey, can you give me some fucking nose?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, man. And so I go back
behind the dirty curtain.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And behind that dirty curtain, strippers with Coke. And then I go up and I give him, you know, like the bro handshake or whatever. And I you know, kind of handed him the Coke and he's like, oh, shit. Like, I just imagine like right then and there that nightly this dude just like after a wrestling show goes to a strip club, asks someone for Coke and always ends up getting disappointed because he doesn't find it. And now he finally found it and he was happy as fuck.
That's not the life you want them to live.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was. And here's the other crazy thing. He and I are the exact same age.
Mm.
So I'm just like,
who is this person? Okay.
So He turns around and he tells the boys, like, oh my God, like, nobody fucks with this guy. Like, he's the coolest fucking dude. He just, like, he's fucking taken care of tonight. He's with us. And then I just basically spent the rest of the night hanging out and partying with wrestlers. And I saw some things. I saw some shit, Leanne.
Oh, I bet you did.
I saw a wrestler who just 1 week earlier in real life had gotten married, making out with a stripper in our parking lot. Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Another wrestler who I was such a huge fan of hooked up with like the ugliest fucking dancer in the club. And I'm like, no, you're better than that. Be better. I will introduce you to better.
Damn.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
And at the end of the night, the dude I got Coke for was like, hey, man, could you give me a little bit of weed? I just got to like come down a little bit, you know?
Okay. No.
Yeah.
I don't want to know that.
Yeah.
Damn. What a mess.
That was the life.
Oh, what a life.
But yeah, a lot of Coke at strip clubs.
Just like it was in this back office in yep. Kill Bill, because we're talking about Kill Bill. So the boss is mad that Bud is late by like 20 minutes, but there's nobody in the club. It looks like a very sad club.
That's another experience that I've had many times. I worked at a club where they did a day shift.
Uh-huh.
Like a Friday buffet that you could like come eat and everything. I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
But yeah, when there's like two or three people, regulars in a club, and you've got like 10, 15 dancers waiting to go up for these same two dudes that don't tip, they're just pieces
oh,
of shit.
God.
Oh, man. There have never been more times in my life where I tried to reevaluate my decisions than DJing a Friday buffet at a strip club.
Damn.
With two customers.
Mm. That sucks. Well, this was at night.
Yeah,
this
even worse.
Been prime time.
Even worse.
Also, there's a parking lot full of nothing, and he parks that far away.
Right.
It bothered me. It aggravated me. Oh, goodness. So, yeah, there's nobody in the club, and so he gets sent home, and this is where the boss insults the hat. That makes me so happy that that came from Quentin Tarantino. So he gets to his trailer in the desert, and he knows. Like, he's still got that sense because he knows the bride is there. He knows she's there somewhere and she's under the trailer. So, you think he's just sitting in there listening to music, but then she runs in through the door and Bud shoots her fucking ass with a shotgun with rock salt.
Damn.
Right in the chest. Non-lethal, but right, just rock salt right in the titties.
Fucking how?
Oh, God. Can you imagine?
Nope.
Nope. Rolls her over, knocks her out with a shot of something, and Bud calls to tell Elle about what's happened. This is where you learn. So are they biological brothers, Bud and Bill?
Yeah.
Or are we just talking and saying brothers isn't brother? No, they're biological brothers. At first, I thought Elle was a sibling as well, but she's not.
No.
Elle is like Bill's girlfriend or girl.
Like,
you know,
all the female vipers seem to be falling into that. Like, he just has a harem,
right?
Of assassins.
Mm-hmm. So he calls Elle, tells her what's going on, offers her the bride's sword for $1 million. And Elle wants that bride to suffer, though. Like, I'll give you $1 million, I'll bring it to you tomorrow so I can have the sword. Make sure the bride suffers in the meantime. So Bud is going to bury her in someone else's grave. What a nightmare.
Yeah.
Being buried alive is so god awful to me.
That is a thought that gets me feeling a bit claustrophobic.
Oh my God. And so they take her to the grave and he, I love that hole where he goes to spray her with mace. It was like, if you're going to act like a jackass, I can spray you. So then you're buried and your eyes are burning. So she decides to take the flashlight instead and they put her in that box. And that is shot so well. That's one of my favorite scenes because of how antsy I felt like I was in that coffin.
Yep.
It's so dark. That screen goes dark and all you can hear is just her panting and it's getting faster and faster. And then you start hearing the dirt pour on top of her.
And then, yeah. And then the nails going into the coffin.
Yeah, that's right. The nails going into the coffin, just hammered in there. And when that dirt starts hitting, like, you're gone. That's it.
Yeah.
You're done. I felt so buried watching that scene.
Have you ever seen the Ryan Reynolds movie Buried?
I have not.
You know which one I'm talking about?
I do know
though?
What you're talking about.
That's a super fucking claustrophobic movie too. Like that's a tough watch.
Yeah, that's just such a terrible thought to me.
Mm-hmm.
To be burned alive, terrible. To be buried alive, just waiting to die.
Yeah.
God damn it. Then we go to chapter 8. And this is called The Cruel Tutelage of Pai Mei.
Fuck yes.
Oh, man.
Let's talk about Pai Mei. Fuck you, pay me.
So, Pai Mei, what? Pai Mei? Pai Mei?
Pai Mei, pay me.
Oh, was that a thing?
I don't know. I just like
that. Oh, I thought that was a reference I was supposed to get.
No, that's just the way I looked at it. And I forgot to mention this last week, but in the House of Blue Leaves, there's a shot. You know how they have those like little rock gardens?
Yeah.
In the thing, there's a shot from underneath it looking up at the bride from the bottom of her foot up.
Uh-huh.
Like her on her shoe is the design that says fuck you.
Oh.
And so like when we came to this one, I was sitting with a buddy of mine who we quote Glengarry Glen Ross like mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the name Pai Mei, it looked like Pay Me.
Oh.
And I just tapped him. I'm like, hey, fuck you, Pay Me. Fuck you, Pay Me, Pai Mei.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay.
Continue.
Chapter
with
eight.
Your critique of Kill Bill Volume 2.
Chapter 8. We're fireside. We're at a bonfire. Bill's playing his flute by the fire with the bride, and he's telling her some story about Pai Mei, where he nodded to a monk back in the day, and the monk, for whatever reason, didn't nod back.
That's disrespect.
So he goes to the monastery or whatever it is where they hold monks, the monk pagoda.
What's a pagoda?
And he goes, it's because he wants that monk's neck because he was disrespected by that monk. And after the head monk, the abbot, tries to console Pai Mei, Pai Mei ends up killing all of the monks at the monastery.
Seems legit.
Yeah, of course. And the legend began of Pai Mei's 5-point palm exploding heart technique. It's the deadliest of blows. You're hit 5 times, hit 5 different pressure points in the body, and then you let that person go. And they can only get about 5 steps in until their heart explodes.
Fuck yeah.
Holy fucking shit. Is that real?
I'm sure it is.
Okay.
I don't know it because I haven't been trained properly in the techniques.
Pai Mei's not trained you.
No.
Well, Pai Mei was Bill's trainer. And Pai Mei never taught Bill that move, we learn. Never taught him.
I wonder if that could be a little foreshadowing.
I bet it was.
We'll find out.
I bet we know exactly how this is all going to end right now. So we then get the shot later where Bill delivers the bride to Pai Mei. And Pai Mei agrees to accept the bride as his student, but she needs to be careful because Pai Mei hates Americans, Caucasians, and women.
Yeah.
Triple whammy.
Doesn't like that American sass.
Don't be sassy.
He fucking love you.
Right? That's all of my favorite things.
Fuck.
That's all of my seasonings.
That's all of your seasonings.
Well, white American sassy lady. Anyways, she goes up those steps. We meet Pai Mei. Guy's kind of an asshole. But I imagine he'll be a great teacher. So you're a big fan of Pai Mei?
Fucking love it. The second he showed up, the way that Tarantino started playing with the old school camera angles, the shots, mm-hmm. the zoom ins, the fast fadeaways, yeah. Like the pull away, like those are all staples of like martial arts cinema from okay. back in the day. The mustache twirling
that got old.
Like, oh, dude, that's so awesome.
That got old.
So awesome.
The whole stroking of that long ass beard. That got old.
The originally Tarantino was going to put it where because in the old movies, it's like a cliche where they have the bad dubs mm-hmm. where they're speaking in their foreign language, you know, their language like Cantonese, Japanese, right. Chinese, whatever. But then they dub them with American dialogue and right. the lips move all wonky. Mm-hmm. Tarantino was going to do that where
that would have been cool.
He was going to have, you know, Pai Mei speak. Whatever, but then Tarantino himself was going to overdub the dialogue, which would have been very interesting because Quentin has a very unique voice.
Yes.
Which would have been interesting, but he instead chose to go the way he went. I think it was a much better decision. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think everything about Pai Mei is just like a perfect homage to those types of characters, that type of the way the movies were shot. Like as soon as he shows up, I'm just like, I'm in. I would watch a whole movie of just Pai Mei training the bride.
Okay. All right.
Loved every bit of it.
Maybe we'll get that movie one day.
God, I hope so.
He has her get a sword to show what she knows. And the moment he stands on that sword while she's holding it with one hand, I was like, okay.
I love when, like, she so looks up silly. At him and he's just like, ha, 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 and then just kicks her.
A better way to see my foot or some shit. Yeah. I can't remember what it, blah, yeah.
Fuck you, white American. Bah.
You white American sassy lady.
So fucking good.
Oh my goodness. I don't know. And then they go through their tiger crane slash eagle claw fighting stuff. And this is where I put, I'm over here, his beard stroking.
Oh, man.
But if that's a trope, then that's a trope.
If I had my beard that long, it would be like every time you asked me anything. Mm-hmm. Hey, Jack, could you record this commercial for me? Stroke the beard, flip it off into the wind, like every fucking time.
It's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
So awesome.
Oh, man. So her training begins. He accepts her and he's going to train her. And then we get a montage of her training. And I put here, I was like, is this not goofy or is it just me? So it must be just me.
Just you.
Just me.
I thought that whole thing was great.
So we also have that that moment where he's teaching her to break, like he punches through these thick ass boards, yeah. Right? And so, and he does it from like 3 inches away, right? So he's trying to teach her how to do that. And she's just bloodying her hand and busting up her knuckles, trying to punch through this wood. So we get that as part of the montage. Then we head back to the grave where she is buried. And she is able to get her boots off and grab a knife from one of them. She's able to cut her restraints. And then she puts that hand up to that board, and I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. And she just starts to punch, and that blood just, oh, I'm like, oh, God. And she breaks through the boards like Pai Mei. Here's where I have a problem. How do you climb through that? Like, how do you climb through? Like, you can't do that. That cannot be possible.
She just punched her way through it.
Okay, you can't get through that without running out of air. You can't climb through that much dirt. That's too heavy for you to climb through.
She did it with karate. Karate, karate, karate. Just karate all the way up. Okay. Boom, boom, boom.
But see, I guess that's where I have a problem. It's like some things I'm willing to accept, and then other things I won't. I won't accept that. I don't accept him standing on the sword. As cool as it is, it's like, I don't accept that in this movie reality. You know, give me violence, give me gore, give me whatever, but don't give me that. That's where I'm at. I think that's my problem. I wasn't willing to accept certain things.
Hey, all right.
People hate me right now. People hate me because there's no logic to this at all. I don't accept her climbing through that dirt.
Man, again,
you can't live through that. You cannot live through that.
If I were to show you some of these old school martial arts movies, man, you're going to be like, what? Fuck no, no, I don't. Clone me some dinosaurs.
But
I'm going back to the real world.
This is a gal who has watched the trilogy so much as of late because it's now on HBO Max. And every time it's real, everyone, it's real. But it makes sense in that world. This didn't make sense in the world.
Sure it did.
Okay.
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 All right. Your American sass.
She climbs through the dirt and she gets out of there.
Also, you got to figure that dirt had just been laid down. It wasn't like super packed and condensed.
Yeah, but how many feet are we talking? Like it's packed.
That's like four feet.
4 feet?
I mean, they bury you 6 feet deep. You figure the coffin's like 2 feet up.
Mm-hmm.
4 feet.
Yeah, but you're laying at the bottom of the coffin, which means you're at the 6 feet.
Yeah.
Did they not put the coffin on top of her or below her? What do they do with the other body?
They just buried her on top.
Okay. Well, that was dumb. You should have put the coffin over top of, should have buried her first, put the coffin of Paula on top, and then buried.
Should have.
That would have made more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Flaw in the plan.
Oh, you fucked up.
There's a fly in the jam.
There's a fly in the jam.
Or Vaseline, whatever it is. There's like some kind of phrase about that. So she climbs through and she gets a glass. I hate my brain.
Different levels of stupid.
So she gets a glass of water at a nearby diner. And then we get to chapter 9, which was L and I. What was that? What was it? L?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, L and I. Okay. Okay. So L is taking the $1 million to Bud for the sword. and the bride is traversing the desert to make it back to Butts, who's making cocktails in a very disgusting blender. That stuck out to me like a sore thumb. It was disgustingly gross.
Not a very hygienic man.
No. Is Bud. And she accepts that cocktail, whatever he's made up, some frothy frozen drink. Oh, God. So she gives him, she has a suitcase. He picks the suitcase up and he's like, oh, this must be my money. He opens it and $1 million looks so beautiful, doesn't it? It does. And he goes to count his money and then boom, there's a Black Mamba.
Oh, shit.
There's a Black Mamba in there. Holy shit balls. And it gets him. It bites him on the face. And Black Mambas, if you didn't know, are referred to as Death Incarnate, which is interesting that that's the bride's code name. Love that little thing. And I love Elle with her little notepad where she's giving the facts about the Black Mamba and the venom and how poisonous it is. And, that was really cool.
The whole time, like, Bud is just laying at her feet, just dying.
Swelling up, dying.
Yep. And she's as calm as a cucumber, just like, the Black Mamba.
Yep. But, you know, if you're bitten here, it should take 20 minutes. But then if you're bitten on the face where blah, 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 your blood vessel, like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So Bud dies and Elle says so Bud had asked her, do you feel more regret or, was it regret or remorse or what was it that he asked her?
That was it.
How do you feel knowing that the bride is still alive? And this is after Bud dies, Elle says that she feels more regret knowing that the bride died at the hands of some hick bushwhacker.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Elle collects the money, which she just acts like there's not a Black Mamba loose in the trailer. You know, she just starts getting down and pulling up money. And I'm just like, there's a Black Mamba still on the loose in the trailer somewhere. Can we show some respect? Can we act like we're just at least looking out for the Black Mamba? So Bill calls. She tells Bill that Bud died, that the bride put a Black Mamba in the trailer, but that Elle killed the bride and buried her in Paula Schultz's grave. That is the final resting place for
Beatrix Kiddo.
We finally hear her name. And then I was like, oh, shit. We've been hearing her name the whole time because Bill's been calling her Kiddo.
Yup.
I was like, son of a bitch. So we finally got her name. Elle reveals the name. So that was really cool. That was a cool reveal. And then Elle opens the door to leave. And then, bam, feet to the chest.
Bam.
Boom.
Here we go.
Got that shot of them feets.
Fun fact, Daryl Hannah and Uma Thurman did not like each other at all.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, they were beefing quite a bit.
Oh, what bitches.
Right? So catty. Apparently they had to be kept apart when they weren't filming, like to the point where they would have the crew inform one or the other, like at the hotel that they were staying at. They're like, she's going out here. She's over there. You can go there.
Over what? Like, be adults. My God.
I don't fucking know. Actors.
Actors. Bitches. White, Caucasian, American, sassy bitches.
I mean, truthfully, though, that would kind of be like us with any other podcasters if they were like if we were at a convention or something and there's other pod, like, look at these fucking mutts.
I'd like to think not, but we would do that.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't really be because they're podcasts. We would just look at them and be like, you're fucking dopes.
Right?
Yeah.
See, I like how you're so much more optimistic about who we are as people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm here to bring you back down to reality.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Well,
no.
You suck me into that lifestyle. That's like, what no, you no, do.
No. We really don't like them, mm-hmm. Leanne.
I try to be sweet Lily, and then you're like, nah.
And to the public, you are.
Right.
And then when those doors close, you're like, fucking mutts.
So the bride kicks the shit out of fucking Elle, and then the fight in the trailer is pretty fucking brutal.
I like it.
Uh-huh. It's pretty awesome. Eventually, Kiddo, Beatrix, finds Bud's Hanzo's sword.
He didn't hawk it after all.
He didn't pawn it after all. And we find out that Pai Mei is the one who snatched out Elle's eyeball. And the bride asks him why. And she says, because I called him a miserable old fool. So he snatched her eyeball out. So then Elle proceeds to poison his fish heads, his favorite meal, his fish heads, which the bride does not like.
I killed your master.
Oh.
Which
and
is
now I kill you.
A great fucking trope in those old martial arts movies. That's what sets people off. Like, you kill my teacher, I'm fucking get you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a master, I'm coming after you.
Here in my notes, I put, where's the Black Mamba? I'm still worried about this snake that's loose in the trailer.
He probably realized that there was a bigger situation at play and just waiting. Slithered off.
He was just waiting.
He's like, I want to see how this plays out.
I'm a bite the loser.
Yeah.
I'm a bite the loser.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why my hands are up like this.
I don't have hands, but I'm a snake. I don't have hands.
I think he had, I thought he was a cobra because he had that little thing that's, that little head that widens out. I thought he did.
Oh, no.
That's what I was imitating. That's what this was. That's how stupid this was. People can't see what I'm doing. But anyways, so they each have swords. They run at each other with swords and they kind of are equally matched, right? So while they're up against each other, sword against sword, what happens? Fucking the bride snatches out Elle's other eye. Whoop-ow! Damn! She learned that move too.
And then Elle just starts like writhing. Like
she reacted exactly how I thought someone who just got their eyeball snatched out would react.
And that, so apparently that take was, Daryl Hannah did that over dramatic on purpose. Like mm-hmm. she just wanted to get a chuckle out of Quentin and he loved it so much. He's like, yep, that's it. That was it.
That seemed legit. That did not seem over dramatic.
No.
If somebody plucked out my last remaining eyeball,
right?
I would react the same.
And then I'm curious as to your reaction with what happened next.
Oh my God.
The bride drops the eyeball, barefoot steps on it.
The fact that it went between her toes.
Yeah, there it was.
That's the problem.
Yep.
Like if she'd have had shoes on and just stomped her eyeball and squished it, I'd be like, oh, that's fucking badass. Not only did you pull it out, you smushed it. But the fact that the eyeball went in between her fucking toes.
And we've talked about the Achilles getting slashed as one of the anything happening to an eye, that's number two. Like, I can't handle anything happening to an eye.
Yeah.
Like a needle in an eye or anything like that. Just, fucking, I'm cringing just thinking about it. But then, like, seeing it stepped on and the just everything.
Smush.
Just smush between the toe. Like, bleh.
Right.
God damn
She's
you.
Feeling that. She's feeling that in her foot, on her foot.
Uh-huh.
And, mm-mm.
And no. Quentin over there just fucking getting a chub.
Oh, God.
Fucking
think
Peter.
He did?
Probably.
That's gross.
Probably. Probably filmed that 100 times.
I don't want to know what's going on in his life. You know?
Beat shit. Worship.
Yeah, that was rough. That was a rough one.
That was grody.
I kept watching it. I was like, oh, no, I hate that I saw this. So that happens, and she walks out, walks right by. Oh, here's the Black Mamba. Now it's back. She walks by, but real recognizes real. And, and you know, their respect lets her leave. He lets her leave. Black Mamba lets her leave.
And
Black Mamba knows Black Mamba.
And as she walked out, I just saw that snake, and I was like, Kobe. Because Kobe's nickname is Black Mamba.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Kobe. So she leaves. Now we get to the last chapter. And I put last chapter... Thank God.
God.
Although I have been enjoying this. These scenes, I've been enjoying this one more. So it's titled Face to Face. Ooh. Kiddo goes and meets with Esteban Vallejo.
Did you recognize him?
I didn't Google him, but he did look familiar.
He was
what have I seen him in?
You saw him earlier this week in Kill Bill Volume 1. He was the sheriff that said, this tall drink of cocksucker ain't dead.
No.
Yeah.
Yep. That was him?
That was him. Apparently, Quentin wanted Ricardo Montalban to play this scene, and he couldn't make the table read. So Michael Park, the actor who plays the sheriff, he was there and he just did the table read and he put an accent on it and, you know, did everything. And Quentin was like, holy shit. Like, you're the guy. We're just going to put some makeup on you and you're fucking it.
No shit.
Yeah.
Well, son of a bitch.
Uh-huh.
Didn't know that. Well, he did a good Esteban. I had no idea.
Man. He was fucking groovy. He was in, he's in a couple other, like he's in From Dusk Till Dawn, another Quentin / Robert Rodriguez movie,
right? That we've not seen,
which you have
not seen. I meant, now
I doubly don't know how you would react to it because it's a vampire movie,
right?
And I know how much you love vampires, and I've seen what you've now thought of Kill Bill. So
I'm so pissed. The new American Horror Story is vampires.
Is it?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, God damn it.
I haven't watched it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Esteban is pretty suave. He's pretty awesome. And apparently is one of Bill's father figures because Bill didn't have a father himself. So what does a fatherless boy do? They collect father figures, right? So she finds him reading a book with a Rue on the front, which I actually looked this up because I was going to see what it meant, but it's a reference to a crew member. Did you know that? Who's from Australia. The author is a person on the crew, right? And was from Australia. It's just kind of a little Easter egg.
Yeah, that's
the one random fact I knew because I was wanting to know what language, if that meant Rue in a different language. That's the one thing I Googled was the Rue.
Well, I know the stunt double for Uma Thurman, mm-hmm. Zoe Bell. I think she's from Australia.
Okay.
Or maybe New Zealand.
Well, the name of the author on the book was from Australia.
Oh, okay. Is that, okay.
And so that's apparently, yeah. And then that last name is her last name. I don't remember. Anyway, so kiddo, Beatrix kiddo, asks where Bill is, and he tells her. Because he says that Bill would want him to, because that's how he's going to be able to see her again.
Mm-hmm.
And he understands why he's crazy about her, and he's got a thing for blondes. Because he used to suck his thumb at Lana Turner. So we have that exchange. We go back to the beginning of the film, which is when she's in the car and on her way to kill Bill. And she makes it into Bill's hotel, his little hideaway. And she goes through, opens the door, and then boom. Finds her daughter. Holy shit.
There's Bill and a little one BB, playing on the ground.
I forgot. This is going to sound so stupid. But I had complete... Like, we mentioned... That's the cliffhanger from the first movie. And it's like, oh shit, her daughter's alive. Through the course of this movie, I didn't even think about it again. Like, it was out of mind. And so then when I see her, I'm like, oh, goddamn shit, that's right. She's still alive. It got me. It surprised me again. I got a double whammy on that one. I just was not expecting it because I'd forgotten about it. So Bill actually seems like a fun dad.
Right.
He seems very endearing. And they're playing like they've been shot. And then she, you know, BB acts, you know, he's telling the story like, you know, thinks BB's, you know, dead, but she's actually still alive. And she fake shoots her mom and the bride falls. Like, it seemed like a very fun family little story time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I'm sure that, you know, that little girl's not going to grow up with any kind of emotional trauma at all.
Not at all. And Bill told BB that her mom had been asleep for a long time and now she's woken up and now she's back. So all's good in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a super cute kid, but we learn she is a psychopath because she killed her fish. We learn this story that she stomped her fish. Also, can we talk about Bill being a sweet dad and making a sandwich and cutting the crusts off? Can we talk about Bill as a dad?
I mean, just...
Bill's not a good dad.
Just crushing it in the good dad department.
He's adorable as a dad.
You know, I mean, yeah, he, you know, shot the kid's mom point right. blank in the head, but whatevs.
Got a metal plate because of him. No big deal.
We've all been there.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all had that happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We can all relate to that. So anyways, Bill puts the kiddo to bed. Or the kid to bed, and gives her a lovely bedtime story about shooting her mother, saying that some things that happen can't be undone. And then kiddo and BB watch Shogun Assassins together.
Yeah.
Which
that
I've heard of
is all 6 Lone Wolf and Cub movies condensed into one.
Like edited into a normal film.
Yep.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Lone Wolf and Cub was a series. Well, first it was a manga series, like a comic book
right.
series with 28 volumes, like just huge epic story.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made 6 movies out of it. And then Shogun Assassin was they basically edited down 6 movies into like an hour and a half feature. They dubbed it American dub. So that's what came out in America. I saw Shogun Assassin before I even knew about Lone Wolf and Cub. Learned about Lone Wolf and Cub after the fact. I was like, holy shit.
So it wasn't a remake. It was actual edits from
correct.
The 6 movies.
Yep, correct.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, someone had taken And this happened a lot with those types of movies. They, like, just small independent video distribution companies in the 80s, mm-hmm. when video became huge, would buy up all these martial arts flicks, just re-edit them, redub them, mm-hmm. send them out into the world.
Okay.
And Shogun Assassin was one of them. Shogun Assassin was like the best of them.
Should I watch that?
I mean, I would have you watch Shogun Assassin before I have you sit down and watch all the Lone Wolf and Cub movies.
Yeah. Because
mm-hmm. I think you'd hate me by the end of them.
Probably.
Learning what I've learned this week. But I still stand by, you know, all of them. I think Shogun Assassin is great.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a real nice bedtime movie for them to watch. And kiddo then, as BB falls asleep, leaves BB's room to confront Bill. And they talk about having a sword fight on the private beach. Either by the full moon, or we can go old school like Bill likes and have it at dawn, which I loved.
Well, sword fight like at dawn.
Bill. I like Bill. while they're discussing this, she makes a run for his sword and Bill shoots at her. Doesn't hit her, but shoots at her. And so he tells her to straighten up. Straighten the fuck up, or he's going to shoot her in the kneecap, which he's heard is very painful. So before they fight, Bill has some questions, but he doesn't trust her to be honest with him, so he shoots her with a dart full of truth serum, like on crack, like truth serum to the max, right? Yep. And I love this whole speech, this whole dialogue that he goes into about superheroes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This was super cool. Basically, superheroes and Superman, where he talks about how Superman is different. Because he's the only one who was born a superhero. He was born Superman, but he has to pretend to be Clark Kent as opposed to Peter Parker being born Peter Parker, and he has to put on a suit to be Spider-Man. It's the opposite for Superman.
And Clark Kent is his interpretation of us.
Of us, yeah. Of what humans are. And he says, that's what you were doing. You were born... You were born to be Black Mamba or Kiddo, Beatrix Kiddo, and what you were doing was putting on a suit to be Arlene Plimpton. And you're not a worker bee, you're a killer bee. And nothing you do is going to change that. I was like, oh, that's fucking cool.
And see, here's what's super fascinating to me, because the first time I watched this movie, I didn't really dig this bit.
You didn't?
I thought we were going to have, like, you know, the big showdown. You know, maybe it was just like the cliche action junkie in me that, uh-huh. like, that's what I wanted. I didn't expect, like, an introspective heart-to-heart between uh-huh. these two characters. And then I thought, well, over time, I've grown to like it. And now, mm-hmm. like, this is the one thing that you
this
love
the one thing
about
I
the
loved.
Movie.
I loved it.
Fuck.
Because I just love that bond between, like, even though some fucked up shit happened, they have this super interesting bond. And he can't, like, the caring between the two, like, it's fascinating to me. I liked it. I loved this whole part.
And I do, like I said, I do like it now. Because mm-hmm. much like you sometimes watch a movie and you're like, okay, I get that now. This mm-hmm. time I like it better.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've come to do over the years.
Right.
And I've definitely appreciated it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, yeah, yeah. Like this is how it should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it would have ended in another big action brouhaha, it would have been just like, ah, okay, we saw that.
Right.
We got that.
It's not deep enough.
No, we got that in volume one with the House of Blue Leaves. Like that was yes. the big action piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got the killer, like real claustrophobic fight with L Driver.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to have like this is the proper way that this should have yeah. ended. I agree with that.
I think this is why I liked this movie better.
Okay.
Like this fulfilled everything. This is what I needed.
All right.
So this was good. So I love that whole exchange. So the first question while she's on the truth serum, did you think your life in El Paso was going to work? And she said, no, but I would have had BB. And he asked, why did you run away from me? So then she tells the story about the last assignment that Bill ever gave her was to get rid of a lady named Lisa Wong. She threw up on the plane. So she did a pregnancy test and to see if she was pregnant, and she was. But during her trip, she was spotted, and an assassin was sent after her. So the assassin busts into the room with a shotgun, and Kiddo, you know, they're pointed at each other, and Kiddo tells the assassin, I've just found out I'm pregnant, and if you let me go, I will leave and I will not come after Lisa Wong. And the assassin fucking leaves. After that whole thing about trying to read the pregnancy test and trying to see what means what and what color means what. Is this positive? Is this negative? Blah, blah, blah. The assassin leaves her and says congratulations through the hole in the door and then leaves. So that was it. And she says, before the strip turned blue, I was yours, but after that, no more. And she wanted her daughter to have a clean slate. A tale as old as time.
It really is.
You know, it's a simple movie. It really is a simple plot.
Oh, yeah.
Simple movie. And Bill gives her an explanation and says, you know what? I overreacted at the wedding. He said, I thought you were dead. I thought they killed you. And I went to find everybody who I thought had a hand in murdering you or possibly murdered you. And then I found you after mourning you. And I never thought you would do that. And she said, well, I never thought you would do what you did to me.
Overreacted a little bit.
Yeah, overreacted a little bit. That's my thing.
But you know what's like, we laugh at that, but how fucked is it that there are dudes in this world who are in relationships that just like beat the shit out of their women? And that's the excuse that they give.
Yeah.
Overreacted.
And then they're like, okay, you're better now.
I'm sorry, I had an extra PBR.
Yeah, right?
I can't shit on PBR. I like PBR. Maybe a Busch Light.
You get a little
Keystone. That's what it is, a Keystone.
A little punchy on them stones. Yeah, sorry, I fucked you up. I was on them stones.
I was on them stones.
God.
You know what I'm talking about? Maine?
I like only on Huntsville Home Video can we break it down, get serious for a second about domestic abuse, mm-hmm. and then immediately go back to the comedy with like, sorry, I'm on them stones. I'm fucked up.
It's just our coping mechanisms.
God. Ebbs and flows, my friend. Right? Ebbs and flows.
What a representation of our brains.
God.
Mm-hmm. So she says, I know what you've done. I know who you are. You're a killer, but I never thought you would do that to me. So anyways, she says, we've got unfinished business. And they're sitting at the table outside. And she says, we have unfinished business. And I think he was like, baby, you're right. Or you're right, kiddo, whatever it was. And he goes to slice first. And that choreography of them sliding around in the chairs, like just sliding around and going, and then he goes to stab and she pulls the holder up for, I don't know what that's called, for your sword. And it goes in there. And then she does the five palm heart explodey thingy move.
Yep, that's exactly what she does.
That's exactly what it is. And I was like, oh, shit. It wasn't this big battle. I didn't need it. That was perfect to me.
Yep.
Bill didn't know Pai Mei
taught you.
Mm-hmm.
The five-point exploding heart technique.
Taught her the move. And Bill says a line that I feel like you've either said or you will say to me at one point. Well, he says, you're my favorite person, but every once in a while you can be a cunt. A hard C. I feel like one day you're going to tell me, like being your friend and all, but some days you can be a hard C.
Yeah.
And it's super heartfelt to me. This whole thing is heartfelt between the two of them, and I loved it. So he asks if how he looks, and she says he looks ready. So he stands up, which you can see. I love the shot where she puts her hand on his hand, and when she removes it, you can already see in the veins, like shit's going on in his body. We're wreaking havoc here. So he gets up, he kind of straightens up his coat and he takes five steps and then he fucking falls.
Heart exploded.
Boom. It was kind of sad. It was sad. So kiddo carries BB out and they leave the next morning at a hotel. BB's watching TV. Kiddo is in the bathroom and she's like crying, but laughing and hysterical on the floor. Just like she's made it. She got through it.
Which I thought was a great.
So good.
And that, because that really encapsulates her whole journey that we just watched.
Yeah.
You know, like what else? What like I feel that not enough movies after like the big dramatic thing. They never show the reaction
I need a peep of that.
Right.
I need just a peep.
Yeah.
Just like, to see where her head's at right there. At
you
the
know,
end.
Like what happens to John McClane the second he walks through his door after Die Hard?
Exactly.
You
yes.
know? I don't need the whole story.
No.
I want like a little snippet.
I just need to see when he sits down in his chair and the stress is gone. Like he's made it.
Right.
Fuck. Yes.
And I thought that was a brilliant shot.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant shot of her happy and thankful. And then we get the thing on the screen. The lioness has rejoined with her cub and all is right in the jungle. Boom. Great ending. Yeah. Definitely like this one better.
Well, I'm glad at least it ended well for you. I would hate for you to be on the ending too.
Right. No, I loved it. The ending was perfect and what I needed for the film.
3.5 hours of bleh. Half an hour of fuck yeah.
Yeah.
There it was. God damn it.
Oh man. I'm sorry this did not go the way you wanted it to go, but just know that I have not shit on this film, I don't feel like. I appreciate
no,
it.
No, no.
It just wasn't necessarily for me. And it possibly maybe I just was expecting something different when I went into it. Who knows?
But then, you know,
learning the history has been great for me, and the things that you've pointed out has been great for me.
Well, I'm glad.
And it
you
gives
like
me
that.
A more of appreciation for the film and understanding, oh, I see why he did this. Oh, I see why he did this little part. Because at first it was just like somebody dumped all these things in a barrel and shook it and then just threw it out on the screen. So
well, and you know, from my side of things, you gotta understand, like when we go into an episode and I'm thinking like this one is going to be a home run.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it isn't, I'm like,
I probably should have warned you.
I don't like the
you
warning.
Know,
I don't like,
probably should have maybe. I just didn't want to be, I didn't want to hurt you before I needed to hurt you. And I thought, well, maybe we can make
I
through this.
I didn't want to hurt you before I needed to hurt you. That is Leanne at her most sadistic.
Or masochistic. Who knows? I don't know the difference between the two.
I don't want to hurt you until I have to hurt you.
God damn it.
Does that go at the beginning?
That was good. That was good. You're going to tell a future Tinder date that sometime.
Oh, yeah.
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 Actually, that should just be the tagline. That should like swipe right. I don't want to hurt you before I have to hurt you. Talked a lot about David Carradine this week. Bring your own belt. Come get that ham glazed.
Glazed ham. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Oh, motherfucker.
Motherfucker.
Well, let's wrap this fucker up. Let's go home, shall we?
Yeah. I'll give this one a 3.5.
Oh, all right.
I'm going to rate it a half a star more than the other one.
All right. Still never going to watch it again.
Probably not.
That's okay.
I feel like if this one was on, depending on where it was at, if it was towards the end, I'd watch the end again.
Okay.
I can give you that.
That's fair. I mean, there are movies where I'll just fire them up and watch specific scenes. Like, Kill Bill is definitely one of them. I'll watch the fight at the House of Blue Leaves any fucking day.
Okay.
You know, so I totally get doing that.
All right.
But next week, my friend, we're done talking about Kill Bill.
We're done.
We're
moving on to greener pastures.
That's right. We have ourselves an anniversary coming up next week, my friend.
We do. It's been a year.
We've been at this shit for a fucking year.
Uh-huh.
Can you believe that?
Still ain't got no money.
No. Not a dime. Spending money, though.
That's okay.
I actually just got the renewal for our podcast distribution platform.
Oh, I need to pay that one.
We got
to
pay.
I think you got the first one. I need to get this one.
I mean, whatever.
I'll write you a check.
Okay. Is that going to be good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we get paid Tuesday. It'll be good Tuesday. Cash that motherfucker quick. All right.
The radio check. I know about that. I've played that game before.
I used to not have direct deposit at the previous radio station, and we could not wait to get to the bank to go ahead and cash it real quick first.
Man.
Me and a buddy were like, okay, let's go.
Sketchy.
I could see when she would put them in the mailboxes, and I would send out the call, and we'd all race to go get them so we could just make sure that they cleared.
I had a non-radio job one time, and the owner would, you know, he'd hand out checks every Friday or whatever. And I knew it was time to start looking for another job when he was just like, hey, if you could wait till Monday to cash that.
That's bad.
I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take this, hand you my notice, and we're going to part ways here.
Yeah. Probably best.
Yeah.
For the best.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But a fucking year. Like, we started this.
It's wild.
Like, we, you know, we've talked about many times.
The
just
middle
like,
of the pandemic.
Yeah, we started in the middle of a pandemic. We didn't know how it was going to turn out. We spent probably 6 months just, well, what if we did this? No, I think we should try it this way. What if we just talk about this? Fuck, why don't we just do it?
Yeah, that was you.
And then we
let's just do it and see what we get.
And we did. And a year later, 13, over a dozen listeners.
Yeah.
From all over the world.
Australia.
Yeah.
Michigan.
Maine.
God, that's damn still you. Fun to me.
I hope they're still around.
Oh,
I hope they're telling their other Maine buddies. It's like, man, I really love it when she says Maine.
I hope they're sending their lobsters.
I mean, if we haven't got them by now, they might be a little rank. Might be a little funky.
Yeah.
A little funky monkey.
Mm. Maybe they just haven't gotten to the sending yet.
Perhaps.
Maybe we need a P.O. box.
We do need a P.O. box.
Mm-hmm.
We should just start having people send us shit here at the radio station.
Oh my gosh, that'd be great.
Just to see what shows up.
I'm here all day, so I can grab it.
Right?
I'll grab it.
Yeah. I'm out of the building in case anything comes that is not cool. Like glazed hams. Whatever's.
Glazed fuck. Damn.
We'll get my ham glazed.
It rocked my world.
It sure did.
That hit me where I live.
I kicked the fucking door down. Jesus. So next week, I put a lot of thought into this. What should we do for our 1 year anniversary? Should we do like an epic movie? Should we do a movie on my top 10? Should we do, you know, what should we do? I just think we need to do an underappreciated movie. It wasn't a box office smash. Not a lot of people talk about it. I don't think I probably haven't seen it. I don't know.
Okay.
It's a multiple genre thriller. Wicked style. It's got friendship themes. Got some father and mother themes in there.
Oh.
It's a movie.
It's that, us.
Right?
It's this podcast.
It's, well, I was going to say, it's like you hook up with someone expecting them to be a six, and then you get them naked in the sack and bam, they're a fucking 10.
Oh, I can't relate to that. Either way.
Aww. But that's where I want to go next week.
Oh.
with a movie called Running Scared with Paul Walker. You ever seen it?
Never heard of it.
All right. Well, let's fucking...
Remember that whole different kinds of stupid?
Yep.
That's where we parted again.
Yeah.
I thought, we're friends. We've talked about son and mother relationships. That's us.
Yep.
I dove way into it on a different end.
It's like we're on the same page for so many pages.
We're on the same page, just different paragraphs.
And then and then we're like, we get to that part of the choose your own adventure book and we just choose different adventures.
Those books stressed me the fuck out. They stressed me the fuck out.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You didn't just
I hated choosing.
You didn't just read it twice and...
Oh, yeah. Eventually, I did keep a notebook and I was like, I went to page such and such on this question. Now I need to go next time, blah, 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 this page.
That is methodical.
Mm-hmm.
That is too much.
And then sometimes I go and I'd be like, oh, you dumbass. Why did you go the other way the first time?
Thinker. You are a thinker. Using that whole noggin.
What is this movie called we're watching?
Running Scared.
Okay.
With Paul, the late, great Paul Walker.
Oh, old Polly.
Old Polly.
Polly Walks.
Polly Walk. Well.
Come on.
I mean, there's not enough left of him to be spinning in that grave, but if there were, he would be spinning in his grave. That old Polly Walks.
Come on.
Can't talk about family like that. You know, I'm going to throw this out there right now. Paul Walker, what? Better than those Fast and the Furious movies deserved. I thought he was decent.
I think I know I've watched the first one, at least. I don't really remember what all happened, but that's a franchise I don't give two shits about.
Correct.
Don't fucking care.
So glad to hear you say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope we never have to watch one here.
Never gonna.
Can we make a vow of that?
Let's do it.
Okay. Under no circumstance.
Nope.
Do we watch a Fast and the Furious film on this podcast?
And if we do, that's the last episode of Huntsville Home Video. Mm-hmm. So maybe episode 99 we review.
Fast and the Furious. Because we're not making it to 100.
Nah.
Mm-mm.
Nah, fucking have not given a shit about the Fast and Furious franchise. In fact, even when Running Scared came out, I'm like, the fucking Fast and the Furious guy, like, whatever. But me and a buddy went to it in the theaters, and we were fucking floored.
Okay. Wow.
I was like, I gotta reevaluate this dude's acting chops. Let's see what else he's in. Like, checked out some other movies. I'm like, yeah, you're better than this, Mr. Walker. Old Polly Walks.
I have never regarded Paul Walker as an actor.
No, I've not seen
him in much.
No.
I did like Into the Blue because they're searching for treasure in the ocean.
And Jessica Alba's in that.
Sure.
She was. Yeah, sure. She was a thing for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For a while.
Liked her.
She's gone away now.
She's gone away.
She married an unknown. Now she's worth $1 billion with her honest company.
Right?
You know that?
I did know that. That's fucking awesome.
Chick knows what she's doing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Good business sense.
Got in and out of the game at the right time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Never had to.
Before people realized she couldn't act worth a shit, she said, ski dat.
I realized that right away. I didn't appreciate her for her acting ability.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. you're never going to hear Academy Award winner Jessica Alba.
No.
No. Nah, but sometimes you can just appreciate someone for being pretty.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Nah.
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 Not at all. Running Scared?
Running Scared. Let's talk about it next week here on the Huntsville Home Video. Before we talk about that, you should follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at
HSV Home Video.
You should also give a like and a follow and a subscribe to our boy Michael over at Underboss Photography. Proud show sponsor, amazing photograph taker.
Photographor.
Yeah, photographor. I believe they call them over in Europe. Underboss_photography. We keep talking about it every fucking week. Like, we got to have a themed photo shoot. And every week, I think we come up with a good idea. And Michael even comments. He'll shoot me a text. He'll get in touch with you. He's like, that is a good fucking idea, and I'd totally be down for it. I'm like, cool. And then forget about it until a week later when we're talking about it on another episode of Huntsville Home Video.
I don't forget about it. I just don't want my picture taken.
Oh, that's fair.
But I feel like it was just inevitable at this point. It's inevitable. I mean, it's like, I want the tracksuit. I don't want to document the tracksuit.
Oh, I mean, the world.
I love the behind the scenes.
The world needs to know.
I know.
The world needs to know, Leanne.
All right.
If you had a fucking baller ass tracksuit, would you not want the world to know?
Well, I'm humble.
Fucking not in a tracksuit. No one's humble in a baller tracksuit.
Right, you can't be. Humble goes out the window.
You might think you're humble going in, but as soon as that sweet, velvety tracksuit just goes up and down your skin, you're going to put some fucking shades on.
Mm-hmm.
That Kill Bill song is going to come in, and you're going to be like, I need the world to fucking know right now. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
Well. Let's fucking go.
All right, fine. We're out of here. Until next week, we'll be back. Be kind. Rewind. Get your ham glazed.
No.